At ExxonMobil's headquarters, Rosemarie Forsythe, the former National Security Council aide, still managed the political risk department. She reported to Tillerson's management committee, which reviewed dilemmas such as the ones in Russia and Venezuela, by reference to color-coded, tab-divided binders Forsythe prepared. These divided the world's nations into three groups: democracies, authoritarian regimes, and transitional governments. The latter were characterized by chronic instability. Venezuela was an emblematic case. More and more of the world's oil and gas lay in red-shaded transitional countries, as they were marked in the confidential ExxonMobil binders. This made the pursuit of a global, reliable system of contract enforcement all the more imperative, in the management committee's opinion. It also made political forecasting and project planning excruciatingly difficult. ExxonMobil's corporate planners had mastered the art of long-term planning for variability in the cost of extracting oil, variability in rates of economic growth, and for the geological surprises that might arise after drilling began. But who could predict the political futures of Venezuela, Nigeria, Indonesia, Russia, Iraq, Iran, or Saudi Arabia over two decades or more? The best that could be hoped for, Rex Tillerson believed, was to think about a range of outcomes in any given country and try to position the corporation so that it could adjust to extreme events. In some countries where ExxonMobil invested in long-term projects, the fundamentals, as an economist would put it, looked unsustainable. Large young populations, high unemployment, and authoritarian or dysfunctional systems of government that could not meet the needs of the population. The question in these countries was how long would it take before something exploded, and then, when it did, how the upheaval might affect the corporation's investments. The impact of Venezuela's turmoil in particular was not confined to its own borders. Instability in Caracas, as well as in Nigeria, Iraq, and Iran, contributed to steadily rising global oil prices after 2003. Benchmark per barrel oil prices crossed $40 in 2004, $50 in 2005, and $60 in 2006. The average weekly price of a gallon of unleaded gasoline in the United States topped $3 for the first time in American history in September 2005. The price fell back some the following winter, but then climbed back to $3 in the summer of 2006. Adjusted for inflation, American gasoline prices reached historic highs after three decades of flat or declining trends. Soaring demand for oil from China, India, and other fast-growing emerging economies stoked the price rise. Between 2003 and 2007, China's oil consumption and net imports grew by about 50%. China's prospective thirst for oil as a transportation fuel to power the cars of its burgeoning middle classes created a psychology of scarcity. Along with soaring demand came less provable claims that the world might be physically running out of oil. Matthew Simmons, a Houston-based oil industry consultant who specialized in financial matters and who was not a professional geologist, published an influential book in the summer of 2005 that argued, on the basis of his review of U.S. geological data about Saudi oil fields, that the kingdom had reached the peak of its capacity to pump oil and would soon enter a long decline. Saudi Arabia was not only the world's largest oil producer, it was also the most important to international markets and prices. The kingdom exported the great majority of its production. Among the world's major producers, it could most easily raise and lower production volumes to respond to changes in global demand. If Saudi fields were tapped out, as Simmons claimed, the long era of low or relatively stable oil prices enjoyed by the world economy from the 1980s onward would be in jeopardy. Saudi Arabia insisted that Simmons's forecasts were wildly off base, but its penchant for secrecy continued to stoke such reports. As oil prices rose, the kingdom launched an investment and construction program to raise its production capacity to 12 million barrels per day from about 10 million. But its project could not easily or quickly undo the psychology of scarcity that Simmons and other end-of-oil commentators generated after 2005. There could be little doubt in any event that Saudi Arabia's ability to increase or lower global oil prices by adjusting the amount it pumped from day to day would be diminished in the future. the world's surplus oil production capacity, that is, the amount of oil that could feasibly be pumped each day but was held back for market, economic, or political reasons, peaked in 1985. After that, global oil supply and demand moved closer to equilibrium. Rex Tillerson and ExxonMobil's management committee scoffed at the idea that the world was running out of oil. The corporation prepared PowerPoint slides to document that governments and industry analysts had badly underestimated the amount of oil in the earth throughout the 20th century. Time and again, forecasters failed to anticipate how technological innovation would free up or discover oil previously thought to be unrecoverable, ExxonMobil executives argued in their slideshows. The corporation demonstrated that in 1925, the U.S. Geological Survey estimated the world's conventional oil reserves to be only 60 billion barrels. By 1950, mainstream estimates had risen to between 750 billion and 1.5 trillion barrels. By 1975, typical estimates were in the range of 2 trillion barrels. By 2000, they had grown to between 2.5 trillion and 3.5 trillion. These swelling numbers did not even account for extra heavy oil and tar sands oil deposits in places such as Venezuela, Canada, and Russia, perhaps another 4 trillion barrels. Obviously, the actual amount of geological oil had not changed during these decades. All that had changed was the ability of engineers to locate it and pump it profitably. As Tillerson put it, "With new technology, we're always finding more oil. We will achieve a peak because it is a finite resource, but that time is well beyond where we are today." The problem in the global oil markets, Tillerson and his colleagues declared again and again, and the reason Americans so often gasped and sputtered about prices when they pulled into their local stations after 2005, had not to do with geology. It was a result of geopolitics. Rising prices did more to hurt the United States than just pinch its drivers' budgets. Higher prices made oil-exporting governments richer at the expense of importers such as America. BP's economists estimated that oil-exporting countries enjoyed a $3 trillion windfall between 2004 and 2007. That wealth provided radical and authoritarian governments, such as those in Iran and Venezuela, with extra muscle and room to maneuver, whether to purchase arms for proxy militias or to forge new compacts with thirsty importers such as China and India, alliances that might constrain American power. For its part, by 2007, the United States had become more dependent on foreign oil imports than ever before. This not only exacerbated its dependency on governments such as Venezuela's, it also put the country's prosperity at risk. During the 1980s and 1990s, spending on oil, measured as a percentage of U.S. gross domestic product, hovered under 2%. As prices soared after 2003, that spending rose to above 5%. History showed a strong correlation between such energy price spikes and the onset of recessions.